turned against Mr. Trump and joined the Democrats in a cry and a call for an independent counsel, they'll be subjected to a primary in 2018 and they'll lose their jobs. This speaks to the hard right nature of the Republican Party base, which is the formidable problem that we all have to confront sooner rather than later.
We're facing an unprecedented crisis. Our global climate is threatened, and we have a crisis of democracy. We've elected a president who's irrational, unethical, and who lies to the public. He's lying about climate change, really the biggest threat that humanity has ever faced.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Ivarum, and on today's PAC show, an extended conversation with author, activist, and Pacifica commentator Gerald Horn about the latest in Trump's political and public spectacles, and also about the behind-the-scenes actions really impacting people's lives here in the U.S. and around the globe. And speaking of real impacts, Trump's first 100-plus days in office have included an assault on our environment and on efforts to combat climate change. Winona Howder of Food and Water Watch will offer her take on the latest. All that is coming up. Now, under the Trump reality show, it is not difficult to imagine Steve Bannon behind the scenes, you know, former Hollywood producer, former head of Breitbart Media, orchestrating the public spectacles that have become the hallmark of this regime, and that artfully hide many of the real policies being implemented that greatly impact the real lives of real people. For example, while all the Beltway is up in arms over the firing of James Comey as head of the FBI, Trump just appointed a man who could be called the voter suppressor in chief to sit on a newly created panel on so-called voter fraud. Chris Kobach designed the system known as CrossCheck, which is estimated to have purged millions of people, primarily people of color, illegally from voter rolls last year, dramatically impacting the vote in key battleground states. Now Kobach may be in a position to implement this voter suppression tactic nationwide. In his groundbreaking documentary, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, investigative reporter Greg Palast outed Kobach and how he drafted those infamous paper, please, you know, legislation in Arizona that made it legal for police to racially profile and stop drivers to check their immigration status. And Kobach was also the defense attorney for former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was convicted for his actions while wearing a badge. Well, in related news, Wisconsin's voter ID law may have suppressed a stunning 200,000 votes in the 2016 presidential election, a study shown exclusively to the nation has revealed. The law disproportionately kept Democratic and African American voters from the polls. President Donald Trump won Wisconsin by a mere 22,748 votes. The study by Priorities USA, a group affiliated with the Democratic Party, looked at states that had passed strict voter ID laws since 2012, comparing them to states that did not. According to the nation's Ari Berman, the study found that while states with no voter change or no change in voter identification laws witnessed an average increased turnout of 1.3% from 2012 to 2016, Wisconsin's turnout, where voter ID laws changed to very strict, dropped by more than 3%. Well, here to discuss this and other threats to our democracy is On the Ground contributor, prolific author, and activist Gerald Horn, professor at the University of Houston. Gerald, I want to first ask you about these relatively hidden stories about voter suppression compared to the latest public spectacle of Trump firing James Comey at the FBI. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm happy to see that you're focusing on voter suppression. Certainly, if we plan to push back successfully against Trumpism, we'll have to pay more attention to this question. And I have to say that there is a disturbing trend that has emerged within our movement. That is to say that because of the drift to the right in the United States, the idea has gained traction that the only way to fight back against the right is to employ right-wing arguments fundamentally. That is to say, even though serious questions have been raised about this narrative concerning Russia hijacking the 2016 election, up to and including a severe indictment of CrowdStrike, the firm that investigated the hacking of the emails of Clinton election official John Podesta, despite this indictment of CrowdStrike, that argument still holds, because I think that many in our movement feel that the only way to appeal, at least to the right-wing elements in the white community, is by giving them a right-wing argument. But if you use a right-wing argument, fundamentally, the right wing is going to win, no matter how the argument is diced and sliced. By the way, one more point on that. On the New York Times op-ed page, at least the electronic version, there is an article by Columbia University sociologist Herbert Gans, who says that the way we should fight back against this hysteria in the white community that they are losing their white majority is by suggesting that increasingly Asians and Latinos will be defined as white. Now, what he's basically saying and what he's leaving out is, what about us black people? I mean, are we left out of this equation? And so once again, a right-wing argument is being used to confront a right-wing issue. And when that happens, only the right-wing wins.
Well, as you see what's happening right now in D.C., what are you watching for next, either on the front of the FBI or the issue of so-called, you know, Russia hacking?
Well, with regard to the Comey issue, many echoes of Watergate have emerged. And recall that during the Watergate era, the mantra was follow the money. And I think that instead of talking about this hacking question of the ballot box or hacking of the election, what should be investigated are Trump's economic and financial ties, not least the story from South Florida that he sold a property there to an oligarch at 100% profit, even though like properties in that region are not being sold for such a handsome profit. The fact that many of his condos in both New York and South Florida have been sold to Russian oligarchs, his ties to Russian banks, his ties to Deutsche Bank, which is in severe financial trouble, which has all sorts of entanglements in Russia. I understand that a congressional committee is contacting a unit of the Treasury Department, which supposedly has data on this. But the problem, of course, is that the congressional committees, as presently staffed, are not up to the level of, for example, the Benghazi committees, which investigated Senator Clinton as recently as last year. And as long as that's the case, it seems that Trump will be able to get away with his misdeeds, not least because he still maintains a bedrock of support within the white right community, which, according to some, composes and comprises about 40% of the electorate.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Gerald. We'll be talking throughout today's show, and I look forward to continuing our conversation. But right now, I want to turn to my next guest. In addition to voting rights being stomped on, ThinkProgress.org and the human rights group Color of Change is reporting that 8,000 families in Flint, Michigan are in danger of losing their homes because they won't pay for poisonous water. In studio is Scott Roberts, organizer with Color of Change and co-host here at WPFW on What's at Stake. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, since the initial report of Governor Rick Snyder cutting off these water relief credits, has there been any response from the governor's office?
I'm personally not aware of any response. From what I'm seeing, he is basically saying that the water is now safe in Flint. You know, less than 3 years after this whole tragedy began, you know, they are trying to make the case. I believe that their language is there is an acceptable level of lead in the water in Flint, which we find to be ridiculous. We don't believe there's an acceptable level of lead. And, you know, being who we are as a racial justice organization, we wonder what acceptable for who, I think,
right.
Is the question.
Right. As far as I know, there is no acceptable level of love, especially for children.
Right. There's, not for my kid.
Not for anybody. Right. You know, I mean, I live in D.C. and I was told when I moved here that, you know, I had a lead line. Mm-hmm. So we have Brita, we have this and we have that. But, you know, I wonder if that, you know, that lead still impacts us. So
I just want to say that's key, that, right? Like what you're talking about, the Brita, stuff like that. That stuff is not free. Right. Like folks who have been living under these conditions as Flint have been putting out tons of money just to do the basic things every day, cooking food, washing, things like that, buying water.
Right.
And then the state wants them to also pay, you know, for this poisonous water in Flint and threatening to take people's homes away if they don't do that. So
yeah, and not only paying for like things like filters or whatever, even though some have been given, but also for medical bills, for all types of things that people aren't really being compensated for. Now, we actually had some Flint residents on the show earlier this year, or late last year, and they recently won a legal victory requiring that the state replace, you know, destroyed pipes in the city. So are there any lawyers helping with this latest move by the state in terms of taking people's homes?
Yeah, from what I've read, some folks definitely have some legal representation. I'm not sure if there is yet a civil rights type of lawsuit. I wouldn't be surprised. But not that sure about what folks' legal strategies are, but have read, you know, that some folks have representation. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I want to ask you about the campaign to bail out mothers today and tomorrow before Mother's Day. And I have an audio clip from the Bail Out Mamas campaign that we want to play a little clip of that, and then we'll talk about it.
Great. In cities all across the country, we are bringing our collective resources to free all our mothers. Queer, trans, immigrant, young, elder, and disabled. Our mamas are not disposable. We need them back in our communities. They bring us love, justice, healing, and compassion. Together, we will bring them home. Our mothers don't deserve this. Our mothers are not disposable. Our mothers deserve restorative justice, healing, and reconciliation.
So that was, you know, a clip from that campaign. So tell us a little bit about how it's going. I heard earlier someone on Democracy Now! Talking about actually this really emotional scene of women coming out of jail and being bailed out already, you know, before today and tomorrow.
Yes. Wow. It's definitely been very compelling. What we're doing is it's part of a national effort called National Mamas Bailout Day, and it really has become a week long effort. Folks in 18 cities around the country are, including here in the Washington D.C. area, in the, you know, suburbs here in Maryland and Virginia, are coming together to bail moms out before Mother's Day, reuniting families. It's an effort by us to intervene in what we see as a really corrupt system of money bail that requires folks to pay before they've been convicted of any crime just to be free.
Right.
So a number of organizations came together at the beginning of the year at a convening that my organization, Color of Change, and the Movement for Black Lives Policy Table put together to talk about how to deal with this issue. This was proposed by Mary Hooks, who was on Democracy Now this morning, co-director of Southerners on New Ground. And we've been working together for the last few months. About 3 weeks ago, we launched a fundraising effort to bring moms home. And we have raised over $500,000. Over 3,500 people have made individual contributions. And now we're starting to see moms come home, folks in here in D.C., where groups like Black Youth Project 100 are organizing this effort. I just saw videos of them this morning, basically at the jail in Prince George's County, looking to get some moms out. It's very, very compelling stories. And I think if folks continue to watch what's happening, follow the hashtag Free Black Mamas or hashtag End Money Bail, you'll continue to see these stories. And hopefully some of these women will be able to start telling their own stories of what it means to have that freedom and be with their families on Mother's Day.
And if people want to give to that cause, where do they go?
Folks can go to nomoremoneybail.org. Mm-hmm. I think it's very crucial still, even though we've bailed out a lot of moms and we'll be bailing out a ton more today. One of the things we're finding, and that is no surprise, is that a lot of these women, as they come out, they need a lot of support.
Right.
You know, and this is a critical intervention to help folks understand that what we need is not to be locking folks up. A lot of these mothers have had issues with housing, mental health, perhaps addiction. And when they're getting out, they're not trying to run back and do things that maybe got them there in the first place, or they are asking for help. And okay. So we're continuing to raise money, and hopefully we can be providing those supports. But more importantly, we're calling for, you know, our decision makers to make those decisions to move money out of these efforts to incarcerate and into the supports that our communities need. So again, nomoremoneybail.org is the website, and folks can go there if you want to support or find out what the cities are that are participating.
Okay. Well, thank you, Scott Roberts, organizer with Color of Change and a co-host here at WPFW on What's at Stake. In culture, events, and media, again, you can contribute to bring an incarcerated mother home for Mother's Day at nomoremoneybail.org. And speaking of Flint, Black Millennials for Flint are hosting their second annual No Lead Zone Old School Pajama Jam in D.C. at Safari. That's tonight at 4306 Georgia Avenue in Northwest D.C., The Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ Board of Social Action is sponsoring a call-in on Monday, May 15th, to call Mayor Muriel Bowser at 202-727-2643 and tell her to reverse her stance against the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. They are suggesting that callers mention, one, that the boycott, sanctions, and divestment, or BDS movement, is a peaceful means to end the military occupation of Palestinian land, which violates international law. Two, that the U.S. civil rights and South African anti-apartheid movements use the same boycott, divestment, and sanctions tactics as the BDS movement. Respect our right to freedom of speech and protest as supported by the U.S. and international law to achieve human rights by peaceful means. As part of BDS, we have a right to boycott Israel and Israel goods to pressure the nation to respect Palestinian rights. And you can email socialaction.plymouthucc@outlook.com for more information, or visit their Facebook page at Plymouth UCC BOSA. Finally, Democracy for America is hosting screening parties for 13th, the critically acclaimed Oscar-nominated documentary by Ava DuVernay that explores the intersection of race, justice, and mass incarceration in the United States. Contact democracyforamerica.org for more information. And those are our headlines and happenings. Now, when we come back, continuing the movement after the People's Climate March. Stay with us. That was Nana Vasconcelos and the Bush Dancers on the Ground, onthegroundshow.org. I'm Esther Averam. Well, after hundreds of thousands marched here in D.C. for the March for Science and the People's Climate March, the worldwide movement for a climate habitable for humans scored what felt like rare victories for this week. With me to discuss these victories, setbacks, and the way forward is Winona Howder, Executive Director of Food and Water Watch. Welcome to On the Ground, Winona.
I'm so thrilled to be here.
Well, I want to start by asking you for your reaction to so much that happened this week. On Wednesday, the Senate did not approve a resolution that would have killed an Obama-era rule limiting methane flaring from fossil fuel production on federal and tribal lands. Also on Wednesday, conservationists in California have forced the Trump administration to halt plans to open more than 1 million acres of public land and mineral estate in California to oil drilling and fracking. And the victory preserves a four-year-old moratorium on leasing federally owned land in the state for that kind of development. And I just saw news Thursday, the day before this broadcast, that after a years-long popular resistance against a proposed frack gas storage project in Seneca Lake, New York, the people have emerged victorious. We need some applause. And the Arlington Storage Company announced that it was finally abandoning that contentious plan to store frack gas in unlined salt caverns along the pristine lake in New York's Finger Lakes region. So let's have some comment on that.
Well, I think what we want to remember is we are having massive victories every day in the movement to stop the fossil fuel industry and protect our climate. It's great that here at WPFW, you're talking about the victories because we don't hear about them in the mainstream news so much. So beginning with Seneca Lake, this has been a deeply fought battle. More than 650 activists have been arrested. All sorts of tactics have been used. And finally, the truth came out. The subsidiary of Crestwood Midstream was just looking for a way to market its natural gas and to store it in those caverns. They couldn't find any client to buy that natural gas. And in the end, what the activists said came true, and the deal collapsed. It's really wonderful that in California that the Trump's plan to drill, frack, and destroy every acre of public lands has been thwarted by the by this lawsuit. A federal judge about 4 years ago had put a moratorium on drilling on some of the most pristine land along the coast of California and actually in the Central Valley where a lot of our food is being grown. And now there is an agreement. They'll have to go back, the Bureau of Land Management and the Interior Department, and actually develop an environmental assessment. So we will have to keep an eye on this because we know under the Trump administration that there will be more lies. And, you know, we're seeing so many victories across the country. Just last month, we were able to ban fracking in Maryland.
Yes.
And many other pipelines have been stopped. The Northern Access Pipeline in New York, the Constitution Pipeline. Lots and lots of victories because people are going out in the streets and they're doing the strategic organizing to make these victories happen.
Well, you know, that strategic organizing is like you said, not publicized. We don't get news about it. And we actually have a clip of an activist in Seneca Lake, Sandra Steingraber, talking about that struggle in Seneca Lake.
We Are Seneca Lake is becoming one of the largest environmental civil disobedience protests in New York history.
We Are Seneca Lake and doing these themed blockades have cut their teeth in the anti-fracking movement and have experienced that victory so hard won, only to turn around and see that we're getting fracked through these infrastructure projects that are being decided in places like the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in D.C., and local people have no control over that. They see that as, you know, absence of democracy. And so civil disobedience often is a tool throughout history that when people have lost their voice and all other legal avenues of redress have been exhausted, that you can turn to this. And, you know, everything that we learned about fracking, that we still carry that knowledge around. And so we know what compressor stations can do to public health. We know that they're inherently leaky, that flare stacks make formaldehyde. And so, and we know how to do research now, right? We can get on Crestwood Midstream's website and look at what they're telling their investors, which is that they intend, they have chosen this place, the Finger Lakes, to become the hub for the storage of fracked gases throughout the entire Northeast. Wow. And that's not how we see ourselves. So this battle between the past and the future that's being played out here.
Wow. So she was actually speaking to filmmaker Josh Fox in that clip. So now, while we have these victories, the bad news is that this week is that, you know, climate change is melting the glaciers in the iconic Glacier National Park. And that even before the DAPL pipeline is even fully functional, it has already leaked. You know, the AP reported that the pipeline leaked 84 gallons of oil in South Dakota early last month. And it's interesting because Energy Transfer Partners really didn't even report this, even as they're still facing a lawsuit by the Sioux people saying that this pipeline is detrimental to their water and their life.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We know that pipelines leak. It is absolutely false that these hundreds of thousands of miles of pipelines already built across the country and many thousands planned now won't leak. And the truth is, we don't need another 40 years of fossil fuel infrastructure. And that's what the industry, that's what the Trump administration is really trying to force onto us. And we have this small cabal of greedy people who are willing to sacrifice people and the planet for the fossil fuel industry. And we know the science is there. The glaciers are like the canary in the gold mine. And we know in the Rocky Mountains that the melting is happening almost twice as fast as other places. We really need to front load the work to get off of fossil fuels. We don't have a lot of time. Yeah. And, you know, we're a food and water group. We know that the insurance industry, Lloyd's of London, is predicting that there will be famines, maybe in the next 40 years from climate chaos. If there is one of these drastic weather events in more than one breadbasket area of the world, we could see famines, civil war, a collapse of the global economy. We know the problems with water that we've been talking about this morning with Flint. Our water infrastructure is already compromised. We must do something about climate change, and we should be honest. It is the people who are most vulnerable, people of color communities, poor people, people who live on islands because of the rise of seas, who are most vulnerable to climate change. Mm-hmm. And we really can't put off for another 20, 30 years doing something about it.
You know, we don't have time to talk about, you know, Hanford, that nuclear site out there, and also the ongoing fallout from Fukushima.
Yeah.
And I know that Food and Water Watch is launching a tremendous initiative to kind of combat and create a system for what's needed to kind of keep up the resistance to the fossil fuel industries. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
We are launching a new volunteer-led program called Off Fossil Fuels because we recognize that it's really people who have always made the change when it's occurred in the past. And we want to give people opportunities everywhere to do something about preserving the environment and the climate. So this volunteer-led program will use a lot of the technologies that the Bernie campaign used to involve volunteers in campaigns that they develop in their community or they can get involved in other campaigns across the country, helping with research, communications, or dozens of ways. We would urge people who are interested in getting involved in this movement to go to offfossilfuels.org and find out more information, because it is together that we're going to make the changes, both to get rid of the Trump administration and to turn back the terrible, unprecedented threat to our global climate.
Okay. Well, I've been speaking with Winona Howder, Executive Director of Food and Water Watch. Thank you for joining me today.
So glad to have been here.
Be nowhere but everywhere.
This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam, and at the top of the show, we spoke with Professor Gerald Horn of the University of Houston about the latest domestic spectacle of the Trump regime, the firing of James Comey. But as we know, the U.S. is having a tremendous impact abroad, and Gerald is rejoining me to talk about this impact first in the Caribbean, in Africa, and other areas of what is called the Global South. And I thought that, Gerald, maybe one tie is the Trump regime recently trying to figure out a way to possibly deport like 55,000 Haitians who have sought refuge in the U.S. since the earthquake there.
Well, before I get into that, since On the Ground had its debut almost 2 years ago, it has been sounding the alarm about the rise of fascism. Some might have considered that to be premature, but as it turns out, it was quite prescient, particularly in light of what's going on in Washington right now with the 45th U.S. president, and particularly in light of some of the recent developments, not least firing the FBI director who was investigating him, and the recent threat just issued this morning that the White House was going to stop press briefings and was going to cut the press off cold.
Right.
There are some very alarming developments taking place, and not least is the continuing support of Trump amongst his base, which is handcuffing our ability to bring him to justice. And On the Ground has been in the vanguard of this trend. Esther, you mentioned that you find it difficult to watch television, for example, cable news, and I agree. I mean, if you look at MSNBC, which is supposed to be the sort of liberal alternative, of late they've capitulated. They've hired Nicole Wallace, the former Bush administration spokesperson. They've hired retreads from Fox News like Greta Van Susteren or like George Will, for example. And so these folks are basically apologists for the Republican Party. They cannot provide you the kind of insight that you will hear on Pacifica News.
So, Gerald, you mentioned the recent thing that happened just recently about threatening to bar the media, the press, from to stop having press briefings. But we were going to go back to the just impact that his regime is having in our hemisphere.
Well, you mentioned the very dire situation involving Haitians now in the United States, about 50,000 who received so-called temporary protected status from the previous administration in light of the hurricane in Haiti, in light of the earthquake in Haiti. But now, within a few weeks, it is suspected that the Trump team will be sending them back to the island. This is on top of the fact that just across the border from Southern California in Baja California in Mexico, there are thousands of Haitians, who some of whom would like to enter the United States, some of whom might even want to go back to Haiti, but all of whom are suffering grievously. And in light of what I put forward in that book, Confronting Black Jacobins, which you so graciously mentioned, which presents a narrative of how we owe our freedom in North America in no small part to the heroism of the Haitian Revolution, that there is a debt of gratitude that we are not repaying. We can repay that debt of gratitude indirectly by supporting On the Ground, which is the Tribune and the Trumpet for Haitians in the United States. Or, of course, you can repay that debt of gratitude by protesting directly to the Trump administration about their plans to send back thousands of Haitians to the island.
Trump has also been very bellicose about reversing progress made toward normalizing relations with Cuba. And I'm trying to kind of bring in the books and help people to see their relevance to like events today. So, I mean, how do current events reflect what you have kind of chronicled in your book about Cuba and Cuba's relationship to the U.S. and slavery and, you know, maybe even bring in the book on Haiti?
Well, in that vein, I'm quite concerned about a trend I now detect in the mainstream press. In the current issue of The New Yorker, for example, there is a very lengthy article asking the fundamental question, is Donald J. Trump a bug or a feature of the U.S. operating system? And this article, in many ways, even though it doesn't quote my work, really replicates my work. It uses many of the themes that I put forward, not only in the Haitian book, but in the Cuba book and my book on 1776. And I mentioned that because I detect that within the elite, there's much more questioning about the fundamentals of the United States of America than I detect either in our community or in the U.S. left generally. And that should be a profound concern to us all.
Can you describe more about what you mean?
Well, let me add another article. In the current issue of Foreign Affairs, which is the Bible of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the Bible, that journal is the Bible of the liberal hawks. It's headquartered on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. An article questions the democracy that exists in the United States of America. It argues that, contrary to what the elite has been telling us for years, that there was no grand democracy that was inaugurated in 1776, that it only emerged in the aftermath of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Now, that's something that people like myself have been saying for years, with being shouted down sometimes by people on the left. But now, in light of the Trump crisis, the anti-democratic trends unleashed by this Trump administration, you find many elements in the U.S. ruling class who are beginning to question the fundamentals of the United States in a way that some in our community and some in the left are not doing. And that should be a fundamental and profound concern to us all.
Gerald, speaking of the book, Race the Revolution in Cuba, you know, when it comes to like the media and the corporate media, I'm very upset when I hear coverage of Venezuela. You know, and, you know, speaking of the global South, our neighbors here in the Caribbean, I'm very upset because, you know, you have the administration of President Maduro trying to hold on there, duly elected, and you have all these instruments of the state, of the global ruling class, as we call them, you know, putting all kinds of pressure on bear on this, this tiny country to have them violate their own constitution to get rid of the Maduro administration and to install another, you know, right wing regime like they managed to do in Brazil.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And we should also keep in mind that an ultimate target of this slow motion coup in Caracas is the regime in Havana, Cuba. That is to say that Washington recognizes the umbilical cord that links Cuba and Venezuela, and they suspect that if they can get rid of Maduro, then they can also get rid of Raul Castro. I think they're wrong, but sadly and tragically, I've been wrong before.
Okay, well, that will about do it for us today. Thank you, Gerald. I've been speaking to Gerald Horn, frequent contributor to this show and across the Pacifica Network, prolific author and activist and professor at the University of Houston. And I guess that will do it. I want to thank Chantel James, Michelle Roberts, Michael Byfield, and our engineer, Michael Red Eagle Nacella. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows and volunteer to even work on the show. You can also hear On the Ground on iTunes under WPFW Pacifica Radio. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. There's a green picket sign that says On the Ground. That's how you'll know that you're on our site. We're listener-sponsored Real Public Radio. Keep raising your voice. Peace. We'll be right back.
didn't mean to take up all your sweet time. I'll give it right back to you. Well, one of these days.